So homework number one is due now. If anybody hasn't gotten it in, do so immediately. How'd it go for everyone? Yeah. Yeah. So I will post answers for all assignments to the assignment webpage. They're going to be password protected. I didn't do that before class, so I'll email out what the password is for homework one, just so that they're only available to you guys. And like I said, do review those. My policy on homework is that they're a learning experience. As long as you're doing the right kind of things, making a reasonable effort, you should expect to get a fine grade on it. The expectation is anything that you get wrong, you can then go look at solutions, understand, so that by midterm time, you know it and they're doing it right. Okay. Any specific questions on homework? Anything that trip people up? Yeah.
Can we look at a ripple current problem similar to part C of the first question?
Part C, I don't remember the problem well enough to know what that is, but... The ripple current in the inverter.
The ripple current through the inductor.
Look at what the topology is.
That's the current fed bridge converter. I'm just looking through the
converter. Buck boost converter and ripple?
Yeah.
Sure. Let me add a slide here. What you've done. There we go. Okay. Buck boost. We've got VG, our switch here in line with the inductor output. Position one and two. Okay. So forget how the subparts of the problem are phrased, what you've already done by the time you get to where you're solving inductor current ripple. But if we wanted to just solve it directly, straight from the start, what I'm going to do is I'll pick some reference polarity on my inductor. And you guys know by now that the buck boost is an inverting converter. So reference polarities are going to be one where it really matters what you pick and stick with them, because there's going to be negatives in here. If I pick this polarity for the voltage on my inductor, this polarity for the current, and I want to solve the ripple in it, okay? How do I go about doing that? Well, so I know by now, okay, I'm going to have volt second balance and cap charge balance in this converter. Volt second balance on the inductor is going to give me my conversion ratio. Cap charge balance on the output capacitor is going to give me my DC inductor current, some expression for it, right? So that's all about the averages, because we've applied small ripple approximation and done this volt second or cap charge balancing, telling me what the DC component is, right? I'm averaging over one period. So if I want to get the ripple, what I need to look at is, what are those instantaneous voltages? I already know the average, but now I want to know the ripple around it. Okay. So the voltage on this inductor, plot that out. versus time over one switching period. Put DTS somewhere here. So I've got subintervals 1 and 2. Subinterval 1, switch is connected over to the left, and I'm going to have VG applied to the inductor. VG. Subinterval 2, I got to define my capacitor voltage, define it in this way. Switch switches over, and now what's applied to the inductor is the output voltage. Immediately you get the idea, okay, this buck boost has to be inverting, right? Because I know the voltage on my inductor has to average to 0. I kind of jumped too far ahead already when I drew this line, but it has to be down here so that the average of this whole thing can be 0. So down here, this is going to be V, my output voltage, and I can apply small ripple to that, say it's capital V, and the input, like I said, you can trust me or the book that when we draw a DC source like this, we mean a positive value. If I wanted a negative value, I'd have flipped it. But this output is just some labeled reference polarity, so you don't know whether that's positive or negative. As you start going through this process, you know the output voltage has to be a negative value in order for the average to be equal to 0. So what's the value during this time? It's still just V. But V is negative 10 volts or negative 5 volts, whatever it is, enough to cancel out the area of this rectangle here. Okay? So that's the instantaneous voltage across the inductor for one period, once I'm in steady state. How do I solve the ripple from that? Well, without doing it, you've gone through and you've solved, based on cap charge balance, some DC component for IL. And there's going to be ripple around that, and the slope of the inductor current is dictated by the voltage applied to it, right? So voltage on an inductor is L DIL DT. Oops. So DIL DT is equal to the voltage on the inductor divided by L. So if I apply a constant voltage to the inductor, I get some constant slope over that period. So my inductor current is going to look like this, then this, where the slope here is going to be VG over L. Slope here is going to be V over L, where V happens to be negative, so the slope is decreasing. Okay. So there's my inductor current waveform. If I want to know the ripple, all I have to do is solve it out to third color here. So my delta IL is the average to peak current ripple. I know that over this time, the amount my inductor current increases is going to be DTS times the slope. And that goes from the minimum to the maximum, so that's 2 delta IL. 2 delta IL to VG over L times DTS, delta IL VG over 2L DTS. Okay, I arbitrarily picked this interval to solve. I can pick this interval. Say, okay, 2 delta IL is also equal to V over L times D prime TS. These two expressions should be equivalent. If I had done my volt second balance, the find is V is equal to D over D prime VG, negative sign. If I plug this in, d over d prime, my prime didn't show up. The d prime will cancel, I'll get the d back, I'll have the same expression. There'd be a negative sign here, I missed it here, because this v over l d prime ts is the total amount it decreases, that's negative. So this should have been minus 2 delta il, but those two expressions become the same thing. So you can get either one of these, and then based on your results from volt second balance and cap charge balance, you can manipulate it into whatever variables you want in there. Rid of these. I don't recall if it was on that problem, but on some of the other ones, it says put them in terms of VGRLTS. So if you had this, you just have to plug in. Does that make sense? So the only time this process won't work is what we covered at the end of class last time, these second order filters. So you always try to approach it in this manner, applying small ripple on everything except the thing you're solving the ripple on. If you come up with an answer that, okay, there is no ripple, then you have to go back and relax that small ripple approximation. But on this one, you have a pulsating voltage on your inductor. You can solve the ripple based on that. Okay, anything else from the homework? Anything else trip people up? Move on then. Okay, so last time, what did we do? Quick review. We were looking at this Chuk converter, divided it up into our two subinterval equivalent circuits. In each case, solve voltage on inductor and current in capacitor for all four elements. Brought those together and plotted the waveforms. Found that three of the four were this kind of nominal case where you can easily solve ripples just by looking at the pulsating inductor voltage or capacitor current. My output was this second order filter where I have a direct LC tied together with no switches, no PWMing of the capacitor. So I have, with small ripple approximation, just zero current ever in that capacitor and zero voltage ripple. Went through and solved out the steady state average behavior and some arguments that the efficiency has to be one because this is an ideal converter. And then address this second order filter thing where we said, okay, you have this kind of situation, you have to go back and relax the small ripple approximation on the inductor in order to get a meaningful answer out of your capacitor voltage ripple. So kind of algorithmically, anytime something tells you ripple zero and you know the ripple has to be non-zero because it's a PWM converter, you have to go back and relax those approximations. Informally, the time that that's going to come up is when you have a converter that has an LC at the output. No switches in between, just a direct LC filter. Then small ripple approximation on that inductor is going to tell you there's zero current in the cap. You need to go back and add in that triangular wave component. Okay. Questions on any of that? Okay. Not, then today we're going to move on a bit into chapter 3, where we're going to look at steady state equivalent circuit modeling. We're going to start most of today with this DC transformer model, doing some review of working with transformers in circuit analysis, and then constructing this thing called the DC transformer, which is a mathematical construct, not a physical element. Then we're going to use this first to start looking at losses in converters. We'll start with inductor copper loss, and then how to take these volt second balance, cap charge balance equations that we've derived and turn them into an equivalent circuit model, which models the average behavior of the converter. So rather than having to continue working with this thing with switches, which are nonlinear and difficult, but we've developed techniques to deal with them, we can take the analysis that we've done and create a linear equivalent circuit that works normally and is very easy to work with. Okay. We'll get to that probably on Wednesday next week. Okay. But to start, what I want to do is just do some review of transformers. Hopefully this is something everybody's worked with before, but we're going to be moving quickly through analysis of circuits with transformers. So I want to make sure everybody's on the same page with their kind of background on transformers. So in a circuit schematic, a transformer, this element that looks like this, I draw two windings that are coupled together. These dots indicate the reference polarity of each winding, and then label voltages and currents on each of the windings. Okay. Physically, this schematic is referencing an element that we'll get into details of the analysis of, but it would look like some high permeability magnetic material in some closed loop with two or more windings of copper wire around it. Okay, might have 1-2 turn winding on the left, 1-2 turn winding on the right. Thing physically behaves. I put some current through one winding. It creates flux. That flux flows through the high permeability core. That flux penetrating the windings of the second turn induces voltage on the second turn. We have some coupling together of these two windings. Near the end of the class, we'll get into the actual physical analysis and design of these things, but fundamentally, that's what it is, some closed loop of magnetic material with a couple windings that couples their flux together. Okay. As far as behavior in circuit, this thing has a couple defining equations. We can use transformers to step up or step down voltages while consuming zero power, ideally. Every power, all the power that goes in comes out. Okay. A couple things we label about this. Generally need to know the number of turns of each winding. We write that as a ratio, N1 to N2, thinking that I have N1 turns on the left side, N2 turns on the right side. These things here are my dot notation. Indicates the polarity of the windings. Physically, that's telling me once I wrap the turn on the left on this physical model up here, did I wrap the turn on the right like this or like that? Is it counterclockwise or clockwise? Okay. And what that's going to do is it's going to change the polarity of the induced voltage on that secondary winding, depending on how I wrapped it. In a circuit schematic, dot notation like I drew, the dots both on the top side of the winding, or more generally on the same side of the winding, means that if I apply a V1 that looks like this, I'll get a V2 that's same polarity. If I drew my dot notation like this, and for that same V1, I get a V2 that is negative polarity. Right. Functionally, it doesn't matter whether the two dots are high or the two dots are low, just means non-inverting polarity. And whether here it's these corners or these corners, still just means it's going to flip the voltage, the output. Right. Okay, so how does this thing work? This transformer is going to have two defining equations. Okay. First, how the voltages reflect through. So this equation is going to look like V1 over N1 equal to V2 over N2. For every winding, voltage divided by turns is equal. Second one, currents, going to look like N1 I1 minus N2 I2 is equal to zero. Okay. I wrote these in a specific way that'll make a little more sense. In a moment, I'll generalize to more than two windings. Most of the time, we'll be working with the two-winding transformer like is drawn here. Okay. Before I do that, one thing I want to look at is the power that goes into the primary and the power on the secondary. I've defined my voltages and currents in perhaps a weird way, but the way that's going to functionally make most sense for us. On the primary, V1 and I1 are defined, but if I multiply them, I get the power going into the transformer. On the secondary, I have I2 coming out. So V2 times I2 is going to be the power coming out of the transformer. So my power on the primary, I guess I should define those terms if you haven't heard them. This side, primary, this side, secondary, just terms to talk about either side of the transformer, primary, generally, whatever I'm considering my input with no other information, the thing on the left, secondary output. Okay. So my primary power, I'll call P1, is equal to V1 times I1, and that is the power absorbed by the transformer. We got power coming in from the left. That's the power that goes into the primary. Secondary, P2, V2, I2 is supplied to whatever's to the right of this. Okay. So if I manipulate these a little bit, P1 is V1, I1. Based on my equations here, I can replace V1 with N1 over N2, V2. And I can replace I1 with N2 over N1, I2. These things cancel, multiply to 1, and I get V2, I2, P2. So the total power absorbed by the primary is supplied to the secondary. As expected, there's no losses in this thing. Any power given to it by the circuit on this side is then supplied to the circuit on that side when connected. Okay. May not come up in this course at all or so in kind of an example problem, but it's something I find that people often get wrong later. So I want to talk about a more general case. So I drew a two-winding transformer. Here I'm going to draw a multi-winding transformer. So I've got some winding here and then some number of other windings. Down here, my last one, all coupled onto the same core. I'm going to define V1, I1 here I don't have a clear input and output, so I'm just going to define all the currents going in. V2, I2, call this V sub K. Oops, bad thing to call it. Call it I sub K. And I've lost control. There. Moment. Here. D sub K. All right. Oh no. Okay. I'm still alive. There should be a little negative right here. I can't get it. I went too low. Okay, so for the general case of some multitude of windings on the transformer, my turns are N1 to N2 to NK. And for this winding, the equations are V1 over N1 is equal to V2 over N2 is equal to any other windings equal to VK over NK. And for currents, there's a small but critical difference. N1 I1 plus N2 I2 plus NK IK is equal to zero. Okay. I'd just like to point this out and remind everybody, in the two winding case, say V over N is equal to V over N and NI is equal to NI. But then people like to generalize those in the same manner, where every winding's current's equal and every winding's voltage is equal. That's not the case. The sum of the currents is equal to zero, but the individual voltages are all equal to one another. Okay? Like I said, most cases here we'll just be using the two-winding transformer. And these kind of simplified expressions with useful polarities will be what you can use. Okay, so that's the behavior of our transformer. What I want to look at next is, okay, how do you manipulate this when it's in a circuit? And working with circuits containing these ideal transformers, XF, shorthand for transformer, is the process of reflecting things through it. Okay, so the transformer scales voltages and currents on one side relative to the other. So in circuit manipulation, we can take something that's on the secondary side and push it through to the primary side, taking into account how things scale to kind of push the transformer out of the circuit. So two easy cases, if I have some voltage, V sub A, and that connects to a transformer, turns ratio one to N. I want to know what's an equivalent circuit for this thing looking in from these two terminals. Okay, so applying my equations for this, I call this V1, this V2. My previous defining equation number one tells me that V1 over N1 is equal to V2 over N2. My turns ratios are 1 to N, so N1 is 1, N2 is N. Okay. So that tells me V2 is equal to N times V1. V1 itself is this VA source. So looking at these two terminals, what I see is V2 is N times that voltage source. So this circuit is equivalent to looking from these terminals, just N times VA here. So I can reflect this source through the transformer, scales up by a factor of N, and I've pushed my transformer out. Now I can analyze this circuit with the transformer gone. Okay. This, going back, here I drew my turns ratio as N1 to N2. So you notice in that all my equations, the only thing that matters is really the ratio of turns, N1 to N2. So this N1 to N2 transformer, the same thing as a 1 to N transformer, where N is equal to N2 over N1. Because all this is a scaling ratio, doesn't matter what the actual numbers are, just matters that the ratio stays the same. Often we'll write it in a way where one of them is 1, just to cut out a little bit of effort. I could do it the other way. Instead of 1 to N, I could say it's N1 divided by N2 to 1. Okay. All equivalent. Okay, so that's how I reflect a voltage source through. Do the same thing with a current source here. Well, this IB connected to a transformer. Same 1 to N turns ratio. I want to know what this looks like. Looking in from this port. Okay, so here we're going to use equation 2 by find I1, I2. My equation told me N1 I1 minus N2 I2 is equal to 0. In this configuration, N1 is 1 of I1 minus N I2 is equal to 0. I2, my output current, is equal to I1 over N. I1 is IB. My equivalent circuit here is current source IB over N. All these cases, the equivalent is based on these ports. Looking from these ports, my little dash boxes, they're like my black boxes. If I connect something to these two ports, going to be the exact same as connecting something to these two ports. I'm going to see the same behavior. And down here, these two are equivalent. Okay. No problems with any of that. Last one we want to look at how to manipulate is reflecting impedances through. So with impedances, say I have some arbitrary impedance Z that gets hooked up to a transformer. N1 to N. I again want to know how I can manipulate this circuit to get everything over to the secondary. Okay. Label. I1, V1, V2, I2. So, how do I figure out what this is? Generally speaking, if I want to do an impedance test, the way I can do that physically is to apply some voltage or current to the circuit, measure the resulting current or voltage, the opposite. So if I apply a voltage, I measure the current, divide them out, that tells me the impedance that I'm seeing, right? We can do the same thing, hand analysis. It'll basically say, okay, let me put some test source here called V-test, and I'm gonna measure I-test, and then my equivalent impedance that I see looking into this port is going to be V-test over I-test. Okay, so I just need to solve for what I-test is as a function of V-test, or the opposite, so I can get this ratio. Okay, so V2 is just V-test. And then I can reflect that back to the primary, knowing that V1 over 1 is V2 over N. So V1 is equal to V2 over N is equal to V-test over N. Then V1 is the voltage applied directly across this impedance. So I can then solve the current I1. And it's minus V1 over Z because of my polarities. V1 over Z would be the current going down through this impedance, but I1 is labeled as going into the transformer. So that's my I1. Z1 over Z, V1 is V-test over N, minus V-test over NZ for I1. And then I'm going to reflect I1 back through in order to get I-test. Okay. So as I reflect the current back through, I1 times 1 is equal to I2 times N. So I2 is equal to I1 over N, equal to minus V-test over N squared Z. So I2, my last step, I-test, is negative I2. Which is V-test over N squared Z. And then finally, my impedance that I see looking into this, V-test over I-test, V-test over I-test, I divide I-test over, multiply both sides by N squared Z, and what I'll end up with is N squared Z. Okay. That means that this whole thing looks like N squared times the impedance I see the same ZEQ. This top thing is equivalent to this. So as I push elements through the transformer, currents and voltages scale proportional to the turns ratio, impedances scale proportional to its square. Okay. How does that make sense? Well, powers have to be the same. If I push a voltage through, my voltage drops or rises depending on the value of N by that factor. My power is V squared over Z, I squared Z. Either way, to get the powers to balance, has to scale by the square of my turns ratio. Okay. Then let's do one more complex example using all of these at once. So if I have a circuit that looks like my VA, some inductor, some capacitor, some resistor, some current source, go through a transformer. RLC IB. I want to know what's the equivalent model of this whole thing. My equivalent model here, I have these same two lines, and I want to know what everything looks like. So essentially, I can just start from the element closest to the transformer and push things through one at a time. Each is going to follow the equations that we just derived. So to bring my current source through, that's the 4, it's going to scale down by n. And after I just push one through, my equivalent circuit would be this thing, then the transformer, then the rest of my circuit. Okay. But I'm going to keep going. I'm going to keep pushing elements through. So now I push the resistor through. I get resistor of value what here? N squared R. And I push my capacitor through. And I get a capacitor of value what? Quick on the uptake on N squared R, less so on capacitor. You're thinking the right way. So I wanted to go into Laplace domain. I could do it a little bit more easily. So let's do talk about this one. So my capacitor, if I do a Laplace transform, this becomes an impedance of 1 over SC. And as I reflect through the transformer, my ZEQ is N squared times Z. My impedance was 1 over SC. So what I'll get is a capacitor with impedance N squared over SC. If I inverse Laplace that to get back to my not a good Laplace, that's going to look like C over N squared, right? The impedance is inversely proportional to C. If I make the impedance N squared times larger, that drops C by N squared. So that's the only tricky one. Very easy to get that wrong and just multiply it by N squared. Thinking impedances go by N squared. The impedance is inversely proportional to the cap. Okay. For the inductor, no problem. This is N squared L. And for the voltage source, N times VA. Okay. The only note here, be careful with caps. Okay. Questions? All right. No questions other than Dr. Costanet. Why are we spending so much time talking about transformers? We were just on power converters, and that was way more interesting. And that's a good question. I agree. So why are we talking about these transformers? Well, maybe you picked it up as we go along, but there's a whole lot of similarities between what we've been talking about in ideal DC to DC converters and what's going on in a transformer, right? Transformer, based on the turns ratio, has the ability to step up or step down voltages while consuming zero power and being 100% efficient. It's the same thing our DC to DC converters have been doing so far, right? The buck, it steps down voltage without consuming any power. Boost steps up. Buck boost, shoot, epic, other things can do either. Maybe inverts it, depending on the topology on the converter or the dot notation on the transformer. So there's a whole lot of similarities here. We can use these transformers to model a lot of what's going on in our DC to DC converters. Okay. So to kind of discuss these similarities, I look and compare the behavior of a transformer. So that of a DC to DC converter. So my transformer, what do I have? I have a lack of pen. Laptop is getting old. Effective conversion ratio, V2 over V1. What? V2 over N is equal to V1, so V2 over V1 is going to be equal to N. Oh my gosh. Back. And mouse. On my DC to DC converter, I've been spending some time solving this, right? My conversion ratio, V over VG is equal to this M whenever I solve some function of duty cycle. There we go. Just like I wanted it. So here, V over VG equal to this M, to some function of D in our ideal case so far. Okay. We're here on the transformer. We could also scale currents, where I2 over I1 is going to be equal to 1 over N based on our equation number 2. So as it steps up voltage, it steps down current, inherent to the power balance of this. Same thing is going to be true on our DC to DC converter. It comes from, well, P out is equal to P in because our efficiency is equal to 100%. So our output current over our input current has to be equal to 1 over M of D. Because when I multiply these two things together, what I get in the numerator is output power, the denominator is input power. So these two things have to multiply to 1. So I have these same behaviors also solved in this thing on the first slide. Okay, P, let's call it P2, is equal to P1. Efficiency is equal to 100%. So these two models are more or less equivalent, where this thing here looks a lot like this thing here. Whatever our conversion ratio is, which is controlled by the duty cycle, it's a whole lot like the turns ratio in an ideal transformer. As far as hand analysis, okay, that all works. These two things are more or less equivalent for 100% efficient converter. There is one caveat. Hopefully you guys have been exposed to this. You cannot apply DC to a transformer. Okay. We've been talking about ideal transformers. Any real transformer, these windings have inductance. And if you put a DC voltage on that winding, that's a DC voltage on an inductor, current ramps up very high until either it blows something up or the transformer saturates and stops working. So last thing here is that the problem. We cannot apply DC to a real transformer. So what we're going to do is talk about things that can do that. So we're going to come up with this notion. We're going to call it a DC transformer. And this is something that cannot be exactly realized physically. Okay? It's purely a mathematical construct. It behaves exactly like a real transformer in the ideal case, but we can apply DC to it. It doesn't saturate, doesn't have any inductance, has no problems. Okay? Notationally, I'm going to draw a bar across the bottom of the windings here. This bar indicates that this is a DC transformer. Because of this problem, this is a purely mathematical, analytical thing. So we can't do this with any real transformer, but we have no problem doing it in analysis. This is now something we can use to represent the behavior of parts of a ideal power converter. Okay. So just repeating that, what we're going to do next is we're going to look at examining the boost converter with some loss mechanism. We're going to kind of do that to two ends. One is to look at how we apply volt second balance, cap charge balance, these other things when there are losses in the circuit, when it's not 100% efficient. Two is to look at how I can now use this transformer to model the behavior of this circuit after I've done this volt second and cap charge balance. We will pick up there on Wednesday. Enjoy your long weekend. We'll talk again then.